Welcome back to the Successful Diligence Podcast. I am so grateful that you are back for another episode. Please do take note that all opinions and recommendations and encouragements that are shared on this podcast are my personal opinion or the opinion of the guests that I have on. It is not to be taken as medical or mental health advice. Please do consult your medical professional or your mental health professional with any questions or changes that you would like to make regarding your own personal situation.
Time that you're doing something, right, intentionally, we can't always choose to spend every minute intentionally, but when you're doing something that you mean to do, it's actually a choice to not do 100 other things, right? You could be hanging out with friends right now. You could be hanging out with your family. You could be cleaning the backyard. You could be shopping. You could be watching a game. You could be doing a million other things, but you're choosing to be here. And that's a gift, right? So I feel like if you're going to make a choice to do something, it might as well be the thing that you're doing the most. And if you're going to do that, right, because you're choosing to do it, you might as well do it real.
And do it well. Yeah. Because you're right. When you're saying yes to something, you're saying no to something else.
Or 100 other things, right? There's a lot of things you and I could be doing, but talking to each other right now. So if we're both choosing to do that, even if we're just passerbyers in each other's lives, even if it only touches one of your listeners, it was worth it. So don't mail it in, man.
Yeah, I love that. You know? I love that. Don't settle for less than excellence.
Exactly, right? It's a hard standard if it's a negative pressure thing, but it's not a hard standard if you kind of go, okay, yeah, I could do better.
If you mix it with the grace, right? Because excellence by itself without tempered by grace, for me being a hypercritical person of myself, would be self-sabotaging. But when you mix it in with, okay, here's the standard and you shoot for it and do the best you can. And if you don't meet it, you give yourself the grace and then you'll show up next time and try again. That's something which is different than beating yourself up because you didn't meet the expectation.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. So
welcome back to the Successful Diligence Podcast. I am so grateful you are back for another episode. I never take it for granted that you lend your time, your ear to the podcast, and that you show your support for the show by sending those incredible emails to successfuldiligence.com/contact, as well as the most fun when you send those voice messages. I answer each and every one personally, so keep them coming. You truly are the best audience ever. And today I'm so excited. I have a guest on the show with me, and he is just an incredible human. I'm so excited for you all to get to know him and to get that journal out, because I have a feeling that there's going to be some wisdom nuggets dropped and some knowledge to be gained. So get that pen and paper out, because David Richman is my guest today, and he is an author, public speaker, philanthropist, and an endurance athlete whose mission is to form meaningful human connections through storytelling. And in his first book, which is called Winning in the Middle of the Pack, he discussed how to get more out of ourselves than we ever could have imagined. And with his second book, Cycle of Lives, David shares the interconnected stories of people overcoming trauma and also delves deeply into their emotional journeys with cancer. Now, David continues to do Ironman triathlons. And if you don't know what that is, that's okay. Super cool athletic triathlons, which I'm sure he'll share with us. And he also does a wide range of endurance athletic events, having recently completed a solo 4,700 mile bike ride. Woo! Hashtag goals. He is married, lives in Southern Nevada, and has twins who are in college. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michelle. That's a nice intro. That's really great. Thank you. Yeah. And actually, you know what? My twins are just finished. They both just finished their master's degrees. So I got to say, now they are out of college.
That is so cool. You got them through not just college, but master's degrees, which is very cool. Congratulations.
Thank you. They have lapped me many times over already.
Well, I'm sure they're going to do amazing things in the world because you have set an example of doing amazing things in the world. So for my audience who is not familiar with you, just give us a little bit of background about who you are and how you came to do the work that you do and write the books that you do and all the things.
Sure. So, gosh, where do I start? I was raised in Southern California, had a very interesting childhood in that my parents had almost a 40-year age difference between them. So I had one parent who was too old to have kids, another parent who was way too young to have them. And that kind of left me and my sister kind of to do things on our own. And then that's kind of the way I grew up, was just learning how to do stuff on my own. And that's a good thing, because a couple hard knocks, a couple bad turns, a couple not the luckiest things that ever happened to me. And I was, I was living out of my car, homeless, no job, no money, nobody to call at 18 years old.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And from that kind of rock bottom place, just built myself up. I worked on Wall Street for a while. I ran $100 million businesses for a big Wall Street firm, kind of went from nothing to something. And then, I never really focused on myself really growing up. Like, I relied on myself to get myself out of trouble or accomplish things or whatever, but I never really purposefully did things to benefit me and my soul and my psyche and my heart. And when I finally decided that I needed to start doing that, that's kind of when things changed. That was kind of brought on by a number of factors, one of which was my sister being diagnosed with terminal brain cancer, me needing to get out of a really stressful, bad relationship and get me and my kids to safety, which I did. They were only 4 at the time. And I was an overweight smoker. I knew I needed to turn my life around. I had never done anything athletic. And I just, all of those things kind of wrapped together with my, ability to kind of get myself out of trouble. I just said, man, you gotta get on the right path. So, so that was the start of it.
I mean, wow, there's so much to unpack there, David. My goodness, it's like you've lived a couple different lives packed into one. My goodness. Wow, there's so much in there that is rich to have a play on your last name. But, it makes me think about, you were talking about your childhood of being more in survival mode because that was what you had to do and not being real intentional with what people call purpose or, where am I going in life? And let me feed my soul type of, I used to call them earthy crunchy topics, but it's more of those topics that we have the privilege to explore once our basic needs are met, which is not the case for everybody. Right. But that story from being homeless to working on Wall Street, that has got to be a psyche mind shift perspective, phenomena. Talk to me about that. How do you go from living as a homeless person or not having your basic needs met and not having what you need to an abundance, in your life? What is that like, that dichotomy?
Yeah. So first of all, it wasn't the way I think of homeless people is different. People that, that have been through difficulty or have mental health issues or drug issues or whatever. It wasn't any of that. It was, I was 18 years old. I left home. I got, my car broke down in Vegas of all places. I got a couple of days later, I got robbed at gunpoint of everything. And I literally didn't have anywhere to go. So the only place I could go was my car. And so I slept in my car for several days and nobody to call and no money. I mean, it's not like a long stretch of being homeless or a long, downward spiral or anything. It was just like one moment I'm embarking on the world. And the next moment I'm starting from literally nothing. So,
well, but listen, David, I don't want to undervalue this because so my husband and I, when we moved to Texas, we were homeless for 3 weeks, meaning that we didn't have an address. Right. So we lived in the Lowe's parking lot. for a night and a half till we got into a hotel for two nights. And then we lived in a hotel for 3 weeks before we found an apartment, which was homeless, technically. Yes, we had somewhere to put our head and, you know, what have you, but there's still a it does something to your soul to not have stability, right? And so, yes, you may not have been that mental health, you know, homeless person we think of when we think about homelessness, but not to devalue the impact that can have on someone whose basic needs are not met. And, you know, I say that because I know in COVID, a lot of people went from having their basic needs met to not having them met. And I don't, you know, audience, if that's you, I don't want you to feel like, oh, well, it was nothing. Like there's value to that because there's still a shift of psyche that has to happen. So I just wanted to throw that in there.
True. And I appreciate that. And thank you for sharing that, Michelle. But I think maybe like 20 years ago, before I started embarking on kind of a journey to put myself first. And I don't mean like in a selfish way, but I mean in a positively selfish way. Like I would do things purposefully to live like a meaningful life for myself, even when that meant taking care of others, being a better father, doing charitable work, whatever. Those were things that I chose to do for myself. But before then, I probably carried those things around as a little bit of a burden, a little bit of a chip on my shoulder, a little bit of it was a little bit closer to my heart. You know, like when I think about now, when I think about, you know, this woman, this 50-year-old woman that pulled a gun on me and why the rest of her family robbed me, like when it happened, it was probably the most traumatic thing ever. Right. Yeah. But now I just look back and I go, that was a different person. That was a different life. I mean, everybody has something difficult happen to them. You just move on. Right. So I probably carried it as a burden for a long time. And then I realized, you know what, just move on. Like really move on. So I guess, you know, back to your point is I never lost faith in my ability to accomplish things or I always figured you put me in a room with a bunch of people, I'm going to come out on top. Okay. I don't care what it is. Like if it's a brain thing, if it's a physical thing, if it's a creative thing or whatever, but I never really had guidance, some mentorship, a path, a blueprint, the foundation set. So I was really late kind of figuring that out and applying it. I just was kind of in like triage, you know, like when people go, oh, I'm never strong enough to handle XYZ. And then you find out some stuff that they did and you're like, oh my God, how in the heck were you strong enough to do that?
Right.
Like, so you just figure it out in the moment. And I was just figuring it out in the moment. So when I got a job, I just did the best I could do so I could get a better job. And when I got a better job, I did the best I could do so I could make more money and get a better job. And, you know, I just constantly just tried to make it to a better and better place, relying on myself to just say, all right, just figure out how to get yourself out of this mess or figure out how to get to a better level. I sure do wish, I mean, there's a part of me that's happy the way it's gone, but you know, it probably would have been a lot different for me had I had a blueprint, a mentor, a guide, parents that cared to teach me how to do things from step to step, or, you know, some safety nets along the way or some guidance, you know, some teachers or somebody, but I just didn't. And that's probably why I take it really personal whenever I'm a manager or as a father or as a friend, and certainly as an author, I really, really, really try hard to give guidance and support and understand what people are going through and kind of be really present in the moment. And does that make sense? You know, like,
yeah, what's coming up for me is that you kept showing up in your life, right? You didn't quit. You kept showing up, you kept walking. And what strikes me, because I find this often, the more I meet people, the more I talk to people, even in my own life, the people that give the most and are empathetic and are able to connect on a really deep level are people who have managed to take what was not given to them, but was so important, and be able to show up in a way that gives to other people, because you know what it's like not to have that. And so you don't want anyone else to experience that, which is so selfless. And yet it doesn't feel that way to the person who's showing up doing that. Right.
Yeah, no, it's really well said. I mean, really well said, Michelle. You know, I kind of look at it as you accomplish things out of like spite or guilt or whatever. And you kind of don't do it actually on purpose, like when you're in the heat of it. And when you can look back, like I looked before at, I got to get out of the situation. I got to get better. I got to do something to help myself. I got to do something to get myself out of this mess. Right. So it was more like, I don't know, giving attention in a negative way. Right. Because it was just like, man, I got to find a better tomorrow. I got to get, life's got to be better than this. I got to make it better. Right. Now, fast forward to all these years later, I still believe that. I still believe like it's going to get better. Life's going to be like, I'm optimistic that as much joy and wonderful stuff as has happened to me, I'm always looking to make it better. I'm always saying it's going to get better. There's more to it. So I think what came out of this like desperate need to work on making today and tomorrow better, it's kind of just totally ingrained in me that today is going to be better and tomorrow is going to be even better. And so out of that struggle, I think that, you know, what was desperation and just freaking how to put out fires in my own life became optimism and looking for problems to solve in a positive way. You know?
Yeah. It became a part of who you are.
Yeah.
And part of your core belief that this is not it. This is not the end. It's got to be better. Which is fascinating to me because not everybody develops that from those circumstances.
Oh, so, true.
And not everybody is intentional about it either. You know, for me in the beginning, when I was focused on, I know what I don't want. I don't want that life. I don't want to be like this person. I had no clue what I wanted to be, but I just knew I don't want that. So let me walk in the opposite direction. Right. But it wasn't with intention. Whereas now, all these decades later, I do show up with more intention in life. And so talk to me about your first book, Winning in the Middle of the Pack, because I think you talk about some of this, about how to show up in your life towards success in whatever situation you are. So talk to me about that.
Thanks. And I am touched by stories when I feel for the writer. I feel for that character. I feel like when I'm watching a movie, I have an emotional connection to somebody. And usually that is when I believe them and I believe that their journey was something powerful that I can take something from. And, you know, so I think the only way that I could self-reflect on that about myself is I know that I went kind of from 0 to 100 on a couple of different scales. And so, you know, how do you go from, you know, never going to college to being responsible for hundreds of employees and a P&L of $120 million for a major Wall Street firm, right? How do you go from being 38 years old, an overweight smoker, and doing 100-mile runs and 4,700-mile bike rides? Now, there's a lot of people that go from nothing to way more. There's a lot of people that go from a much further spot and then go 10 times further, but at least that's a big enough gap. And I thought in writing my first book, that I could talk about some of those parallels, some of the things that I learned along the way, because I figure there's a lot of people like me that don't already have it figured out going into the game. I know a lot of people that did have a lot of it figured out.
My hand is raised because I'm still figuring out. And I love when people share the nuggets that they learned along the way, because that's a huge transformation on different levels that you went through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. And I admire people that have it figured out. You know, I admire people that, you know, kind of know the stepping stones. You know, here's what I'm going to do in high school. Here's what I'm going to do after high school. Here's what I'm going to do in college. And this is going to be my career. And this is my life. And this is how I'm going to meet people and how I'm going to get married. I love that people have that figured out. I never did. And so the lessons that I learned along the way, I thought, well, maybe they could resonate with some people. And so lessons such as like, I don't know, like one thing I learned is that things are supposed to be hard. Like, okay, like if you know that things are going to be really, really, really hard, right, then you can just kind of get over that and just deal with the task at hand. Do you know, like when you're running a big business, okay, you can't complain about how difficult it is. You can't complain about really tough decisions that you got to make. You can't complain about having to fire people and when somebody steals from your business or when something bad happens. Because if you're running a big business, there's going to be big problems and it's going to be hard. So if you just accept that it's hard, then you can just deal with the task at hand, kind of like the same as running 100 miles. I never would have contemplated how difficult it is. And I never would have willingly said, I'll take that kind of pain. I'll take that kind of mountain to climb because it's just too hard. But then I realized, well, if you're going to do anything meaningful, it's freaking supposed to be hard. So don't focus on the fact that it's hard and just figure out a way to get it done if it's something that you want to do. And those are the kind of lessons that I wished I would have learned earlier, but I kind of learned along the way. So in the first book, I talk about all these different lessons learned, you know, like how to take one step forward, the fact that it's going to be hard, how to rely on others, how to not rely on others. And, you know, all of these kind of things.
That's so fascinating because, you know, it speaks to me of managing expectations, right? If I'm expecting it to be hard, then I'm not disappointed when it is, right? And then I'm not going to complain because I was expecting it to be hard. And yet our natural tendency is to want things to be easy and to get comfort, right? So how do you, like, is it a mental thing of like continually, you know, rewriting that narrative of it's going to be hard. So just, you know, show up, it's going to be hard. Or like, how do you deal with that?
Yeah. Great. Amazing. One of the reasons I was so excited to you is you asked such great questions. And so like, look, I was a manager for bigger and bigger businesses along the way. Okay. And I used to dread it when I had to fire somebody. I used to dread it. It would weigh on me. Oh my God. It's the last thing I wanted to do because I'm thinking to myself, you know what? Like, this person's got a family, you know, they were trying their best, but they just didn't do something. But, you know, and it's like, oh, I got to fire them because if I don't fire them, I'm going to get fired because I, blah, 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 right? And I'm just dealing with all of this stress. And I remember I had a mentor a little bit later in life, and I was complaining to her about having to fire one of our employees. And she closed the door behind me and she sat down. And she said, do you realize how big our business is? Do you realize how important it is? Do you realize how much we're responsible for? I said, yeah. She goes, it's supposed to be hard. Deal with the hard things first. Fire her and first thing in the morning, done with it, out of your mind, no stress. She deserved it. She put herself in this place. It's not your life. It's not her life you're living. It's your life you're living. Just deal with the hard stuff first. So now when I have something really, really hard that I have to do, I don't stress over it like the way I used to because I have to do it. I'm in a position where I have to do it, right? I'm not a jerk. I'm not going to do the wrong thing. But if the right thing is to do something very, very hard, instead of stressing over it, instead of being burdened by it, I think it's like, yeah, I'm going to deal with it right now and then move on. So I didn't know that.
Also, in that message that she gave you was you're not responsible for this other person's actions, what she earned. If she earned getting fired, who are you to stand in the way of that consequence, you know, not being a lesson to her? Because maybe that was something in her life journey she needed to experience and learn and grow from. And so I love that sort of message because it's true. You know, and talk to me about this because I know with family and with life situations that come up, I'm a big believer of there's different seasons and lessons to learn to help you become the person you're supposed to be. And so certain hard times and hard situations that you have to go through are meant for your ultimate good, right? For you to come out the other side who you're supposed to be. What do you think about that? Do you think that we can be the people we need to be without the hard times and the hard relationships? Or do you think that it's something that we're supposed to go through in order to learn what we need to learn to grow?
I think if you purposefully measure the times you're going through, whether they're easy, medium, or very difficult, if you purposely measure them and put them in perspective to your life, then you can grow. I just happen to have taken most of the lessons that I've learned in life from really difficult times, right? So, I mean, I can tell you a couple that are just like unbelievable. I remember I was in this relationship with my kid's mom, and it was the most ridiculous thing. And I had a really good friend, Michelle, that I kept complaining to. And I kept saying, oh my God, Chris, like she's just the meanest, angriest, nastiest person. It's just bringing me down. And for like a couple of years, I was just unbelievably stressed and burdened by it. And he finally looked at me and he goes, dude, she's not the problem. You're the problem. And I went, huh? And he goes, yeah, you're the problem. What? Yeah. He goes, you're a compassionate, empathetic, caring person who's always looking for tomorrow to be better. She's just mean to the core. She doesn't know any better. Like, she literally doesn't have that kind of awareness. She doesn't know any better. You're trying to make her something she's not, and you're not being something you are. It's your fault. And I'm like,
wow.
Whoa. That's some brilliance right there. That is some brilliance. Why don't you stop making other people what they're not? And why don't you focus on becoming what you are? That's like, whoa, that's a total 180. Right?
That is like,
that's knowledge.
That's a golden wisdom nugget right there.
Yeah.
Because it speaks to your perspective shift and managing those expectations and realizing you cannot make someone be someone that they're not. And you cannot make yourself someone that you're not. That right there is, right? I mean,
who knew?
David, who knew? Right,
well, there's a lot of those things. And I talk about them in that first book. There's another one that really helped form me. And I remember the same mentor, the same person. We were running a super big business. She had to go away for a little bit. And then just like, a week and a half or something. And she came back and she told me all these things I had to take care of and don't drop the ball on. And they were literally a list of 100 things. Okay. I dropped the ball on one thing. Okay. One thing, the 99 I exceeded. One thing I dropped the ball on. She walks in. The minute she walked in, she brought me into her office, closed the door. She said, what the heck happened? And I go, excuse me. She started giving me this hard time about that one thing I dropped the ball on. And I go, wait a second. What about the other 99? And she looked at me and she goes, you don't get credit for the things I expect you to do.
Mm.
She goes, I didn't expect that you would blow up that mess, right? That's the thing I'm worried about. You don't get credit for what I expect you to do. Why are you holding yourself to so low of a standard? And I went, whoa.
Wow.
You mean, so getting up out of the bed and giving it my best is not good enough? That's some pretty good wisdom. Like, you don't get credit for just doing the things you're expected to do. You got to go above and beyond before you start getting credit. And I'm like,
except David, most people are like, wait a minute, hold up, give me my credit. I need that reinforcement.
Yes. Agreed. And I'm not the kind of person that just says, hey, you're supposed to take 100 steps. You only took 99. What the hell happened to that 100 step? I'm not that guy. Right. But I do apply it to a lot of things where I say the standard isn't the minimum. The standard isn't the minimum expected performance, right? It doesn't matter what I'm doing. I'm holding myself to that level, my athletic things. Do you know, like, I feel like you can rest in exceptional, but I don't think you can rest in the minimum expectation. Mm-hmm. And I like that, because let me put that into another context, right? Somebody asked me one time, and maybe this is because I have mother issues or whatever, but somebody asked me one time, would you rather have taken a $10,000 bonus check or her calling you up and giving you a genuine thank you? And I go, oh, are you kidding me? I would have taken the gratitude on a 5-minute phone call over that $10,000 any day, right? Because it's so rare that she would give it. Right. And it's like when you put your feet on the ground and you want to do something so bad, whether that's for yourself or somebody else, you want to run the business well, you want to show your spouse how proud you can make them. You want to be the best parent that day. You want to go do a marathon. You want to finish that piece of artwork that you just finished or whatever. I mean, how cool is it that you go, I'm so motivated to do this thing, I'm not going to stop at less than exceptional. And I like having that as a goal. Do you know?
I love that. Don't stop at less than exceptional. So in that vein, let's talk about you becoming exceptional in your life and going from an overweight smoker to this incredible endurance athlete. How did you do it? What was your journey like? Was it like talk to me about that.
Okay. But let's also remember that my exceptional is just, I'm in the middle of the pack, right? I'm never going to win any kind of an Ironman triathlon or a 100 mile race. How do
you know that though? You don't know that.
I do know it because I'm not that athletic. I'm you know, I'm older than the other competitors. I got a lot of things on my plate that's not going to make it the sole focus of my life. Like, I'm good just getting it done. Sometimes.
But wait a minute, David. I gotta jump in here. Wait a minute. Yeah. If your 20-year-old self, yeah, right? If you told your 20-year-old self you're gonna be running these incredible, you know, marathons and you're gonna be an endurance athlete and an author of 2 books, would you have believed yourself?
Oh, no way.
Exactly. No way. So who you are now may not believe, oh, I could be this, but why accept less than exceptional?
Right. But exceptional for me is I was a 38-year-old overweight smoker who was not living his best life. I couldn't run 2 minutes straight. Mm. So I actually looked in the mirror. I remember putting my hands on the counter and leaning in and looking at the mirror. My kids and I were to safety. I was contemplating, you know, my sister's recent announcement that she had terminal brain cancer. Mm. I'm thinking about all the stress at work and all this nonsense. And I'm looking at myself in the mirror and I go, who do you want to be? Like, seriously, like, why are you wasting your life? Like, why are you doing this? And I go, you know, you're always doing stuff for other people. You're always trying to make other people happy, right? Why don't you just start worrying about yourself a little bit? You know, figure out who you want to be. So I said, I want to be an athlete. I want to go be athletic. I want to live longer and lose weight and stop smoking and be a better parent. And it's got to start with your own health. Right. So I said, that's where I'm going to start. I couldn't even run 2 minutes, Michelle, wow. Not even 2 minutes. So, but then I did run 2 minutes and then I ran a mile. And then a couple of weeks later, I was able to run a few miles. And then, you know, 6 months later, I did a half Ironman, and a couple of months after that, I did a full Ironman, and you know, then I kept going, saying,
"Listen, I could not in 6 months prepare to do an Ironman, and get to that point. So I'm going to give you some credit that you are pretty much exceptional. And you know, once you asked yourself those hard questions and answered yourself back, and then committed to the process." That to me is above middle of the pack, because I know for me, there's no way I'm running a marathon in 6 months. Even if I started today to train, there's no way. Like, I just wouldn't be able to do it. Now, I could probably get up to under a 20-minute mile, right? You know, to right. My personal best or whatever, but there's no way I can do that. And so, you know, give yourself some credit there.
You say that, but I don't believe it. If you were as motivated as I was, and I don't know what it was that made me motivated to do that. But I mean, look at what a great podcaster you are. Look at the great coaching that you do, right? You're focused on those things. If you didn't focus on your husband and your, you know, your life and your coaching and your mentoring and all of this, then you would put way more hours into that. If that's mm-hmm. the thing that you chose to do, and you would figure out a way to do it. So
how many hours did you train? So when you were going from, you know, under 2 miles to mm-hmm. finally a mile, like how many hours were you dedicating to that?
A lot. I would put aside an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours a day, okay. of doing serious amounts of training, even if sometimes, you know, I'd have to take a day off or I couldn't train or whatever, but I did have a lot more time because I was more at peace. Mm-hmm. Right. I also needed to stay busy so that I wouldn't smoke. I also, you know what I'm saying? So
that's true. Yeah.
So it became hours but it was weird because I would go to work in the morning. I'd come home. I take care of my kids. I put them to bed and I literally would run around the block, go check on them, run around the block, go check on them, run around the block, go check on them. I'd do that for like 4 hours. Right. Wow. Because, you know, that's the way I'm going to get my training in. Right. So, and they're just sleeping. So no big deal. Right. So I feel like you could do it if it was important enough to you. And that was important enough to me. And so I combine that with one of these other lessons that I learned, which is that I had always set my goals a little too low, mm-hmm. kind of that being an exceptional thing, like set your goals higher because you can usually achieve them. So, you know, I said, well, geez, if I can do an Ironman, why can't I do 2 in a year? Why can't I do 3 in a year? If I could wow. run a marathon, why don't you run 50 miles? Okay, well, you've run 50 miles a bunch. Why don't you try to run 100 miles? Okay, you can run 100 miles. Why don't you try the next thing, right? And so you always say like, maybe are my goals too low? you know, am I not pushing myself hard enough in good ways, you know?
What I love is you keep asking yourself better questions. And listeners, you know, I always talk about the quality of your questions equals the quality of your life. And, you know, from what I'm getting from you, David, is that you were taking the wisdom nuggets of the lessons, asking yourself new questions and answering and showing up in a really powerful way, which is how you change your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love that.
And with intention, right? But again, I want to frame this in that I was not really self-aware. I didn't have like mentors. I didn't have a guide. I didn't have an innate understanding of kind of how I interacted with the world. I had to figure that out over time. And I think heading into that second book, it all of those tools and what I had learned, you know, really helped me in talking to people about their traumas and the difficulties in their life, because I could relate. You know, I might not be able to relate to somebody who walked in when they were 6 years old and witnessed their mom killing themselves. I could, but right, which is one of my book participants had witnessed that, but I could relate in a way, because when I was running a big office of employees, one of my employees jumped off the roof, and I had to go walk around, or chose to go walk around to all the different employees and ask them, you know, how they were processing it. Were they okay? Did they, you know, did they want somebody to talk to? And each one kind of opened up and told me a story about suicide. And obviously, if anybody is having mental health issues or, you know, negative thoughts about themselves, just talk, please talk to a professional or talk to somebody. But I could, even though I couldn't understand him, I could kind of empathize and understand, you know, that I could wrap my brain around that kind of like how that might traumatically affect that person. And so I think the difficult things that I went through gave me another level of empathy that I could attach to my curiosity to ask more questions and be intentional and try to get us from point A to point B. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you've used the word intentional throughout our conversation. So I'm going to ask this, because from what I'm gathering, and I may, correct me if I'm wrong, is that you were showing up, right? Not being intentional. And then over your life journey, you've become much more intentional. And you've also become much more conscious of being responsible for yourself in a way that you weren't in the beginning of your journey. So talk to me about how that evolved for you.
You know, I don't know what the key is, and I'll talk about the evolution a little bit. I don't know exactly what the key is, but I think one of the keys is really being authentic in your appraisal of yourself. And I knew that I was kind of glossing over some of the issues that I had in my life. I was not paying attention to them, because I knew that I was going to be cynical. I was going to be angry. I was not going to forgive myself for making bad mistakes or, you know, being late to understand something. And so I was not in touch with myself. And I think that along the way, I learned that I'm really good at allowing other people to make mistakes and learn from things. Why don't I give myself that same, you know, that same wide berth? What, you know, why do I got to beat myself up for bad decisions? Why do I got to beat myself up because I wasn't given XYZ in life, or because I didn't, you know, get XYZ in life? And when I realized that, you know what, you just give yourself a break, dude, like just relax, right?
Extend some grace to yourself. And yeah, that the same grace you give to other people, which, right. I had to learn that lesson too. I used to be, well, I still am my own worst critic, you know, the expectations of myself, I never extend those to other people. But I've also had to learn not only to extend myself grace, but also to forgive myself. Have you had to forgive yourself, and how has forgiveness played a part in your journey at all?
Most definitely I've had to forgive myself, because, you know, we only know what we know when you know it, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you just, how are you going to know something before you know it? And some people are way more self-aware, or just aware in general, than I happened to have been at the time that I wished I was more aware, but I wasn't. And so you just got to give yourself a break sometimes and just say, all right, you know what? Sometimes trying your best is okay. No, sometimes it's not, right? Trying is not okay. Doing is much better than trying sometimes, but sometimes in life, you need to just cut yourself a break. If you didn't know any better, then you know what? If that's the best you could have done, gosh, I'll remember, I'll never forget one of the earliest lessons I learned about being a manager was I was just pulling my hair out about all these people that were mediocre performers. And my manager said to me, he goes, dude, your job is not to make everybody the best. Your job is to make everybody the best they can be. And I'm like, oh, shoot. So that was an early way of saying, you know, you need to focus on yourself and getting the most out of you, right? Than, you know, living up to somebody else's expectation. And so, you know, I'm kind of rambling a little bit on your.
No, not at all. Because what I'm picking up, I don't find it rambling at all. And listeners, I know if you've got your journal, you're writing some of these wisdom nuggets down, because you can't compare yourself to someone else, because your best may not be their best. And you can't expect them to live up to the level that you expect of yourself sometimes, because they may not have it in them. Like it reminds me of my mother, who I used to say was not the mother I wanted or needed. And yet she turned out to be exactly the mother I needed and wanted. She did the best she could with what she had. And even though there were still gaps for me, I was able to go fill those gaps with other people and connecting in other ways with the world, but also learning those lessons from those gaps. And she did the best she could with what she had. And I think that lesson, when I was able to forgive her for being the best she could, you know, she gave her all. I had to also say that for myself, you know, like you were saying, you're doing the best you can with what you have. You don't know what you don't know. So why would you expect yourself to know something you don't know that you don't know?
Right. Which is what allows you to be authentic, have intentional, real, grounded, you know, a heart-centered conversation with yourself, which allows you to set higher goals, which allows you to forgive yourself for what you didn't know. Where I think the problem becomes is if we allow kind of like these bad habits or bad intentions or not being our best selves or not being exceptional or not being the best for others that we can be. When we take all of those type of things and we're aware that we're doing it, which sometimes if you do have the talk with yourself, and you go, you know, I hate it when somebody says to me, oh, you know what? Oh, I'm just such, I could be a better parent, but I just can't get myself to stop yelling at my kids. And I'm like, whoa, wait a second. If you know that you're yelling at your kids and you know it's not good for them and you know you don't want to do that, then freaking fix it.
Because you're choosing, right? At that point. Like now, if you're aware of it, you're choosing.
Exactly. If you don't know, and it's kind of like you don't even understand that you're, you know, that you're a loud talker or you're yelling or you're being mean or whatever. I don't even know if you're not aware of it, because who hasn't been at this point where somebody points out the obvious and you're like, I never knew that about myself. But once you know, don't you really owe it to yourself and don't you owe it to the people that care about you to do better? Don't you?
Yeah. Right. And to tell the truth about it, you know?
Yes. So I wasn't very aware of myself, at least not to the level where I was being, you know, like putting myself first and going, this is what you want to be. This is who you want to be for your kids, for your wife, for your friends, for your employees, for your bosses, you know, like this is what you should be doing for you. And it's like, oh, okay. Then that was the journey that brought me from, you know, kind of like not being aware and just drifting. It's funny. I just did an Ironman the other day. Okay. 2 weeks ago. And it was in Tennessee, and the swim is 2.4 miles, but it's down river. Okay. And somebody told me, because I told them I did my PR, which means my personal best. I've done 18 Ironmans. Okay. And over a 20-year period. And I just did my best swim. Okay. And
wow.
Yeah. And he says to me, he goes, oh, but it was down river. And I go, excuse me? And he said, well, you know, it's down river. And I go, really? So because the wind was at my back, or because I had a little bit of help from the flow of river, I shouldn't be proud about doing the absolute best I've ever done at something.
Yeah. Like don't take that credit away, right, from me.
So that even was more enforced by the fact that they were playing a joke. Somebody in Tennessee was playing a joke as a news story. They put a bag of potato chips at the start on the swim because the being downriver, the bag of potato chips could finish the swim. Do you know what I'm saying? Because it's going down the river. Now, I'm not the bag of potato chips, right? I'm not unintentionally going from the top of the river to the bottom of the river. I, with intention, went from, you know, from point A to point B on that swim and did the best that I've ever done. Who cares that I got a little help from downwind or down river? Who cares that what, right? The point is that I absolutely did the best that I could do. And I'm like, I'm always thinking I could always do better. I mean, how cool is that? That's really cool.
You celebrate the outcome of that, regardless of the variables that contributed, knowing that you with intention showed up and did your absolute best. And that is to be celebrated. I love that. Absolutely love that.
So why am I going to get angry at somebody or feel like a chip on my shoulder like I used to if somebody had more money growing up or had a better education or had parents that love them? Or why am I gonna think that that's their advantage? It's not their advantage, it's just their life. Who cares, right?
Well, don't, and also, you don't know what prices they had to pay for having that, you know. You never know the true story.
Absolutely. But I think the former me didn't like always thought like, oh, you know I got to do better, I got to try harder, you know, other people get breaks and but, you know, like I just didn't get it. And then I think through, like we said earlier, through some of the more difficult times that I've had or that I put myself through or whatever, then you learn things, you become more aware. You start to live the things that you want to live. You know, like I want to not set low goals because now I know better.
Right. I don't want to be overweight. I don't want to smoke. I want to be the best version of myself.
Yeah.
With intention, and then see if I can exceed that, because why settle for less than excellence? As you said earlier, that's going to be my new phrase.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean being perfect. It just means don't be less than excellent. And for you, if whatever that ends up being for you, right, that's great. Just make sure the goal's high enough. Make sure it's, you know, if it can be something that won't hurt people, right? But whatever, but just, you know, just don't wait. Just go, like, today is going to be better. Tomorrow's going to be even better. I just believe that, right? Before I had to make it so. Now I just want it to be so, you know?
Yeah, I love that. So as we sort of bring our conversation to a close, mm-hmm. I don't want to neglect your newest book, Cycles of Life, because it's so powerful. Talk to me about that and what is so meaningful about the book.
So I'll keep it short because I know we're running up against it. But basically what I did is I noticed that through being observant of my sister and what she was going through and other people, that I noticed what they were going through when I was doing fundraisers to raise money for cancer and that type of stuff, is that people were really good about dealing with the tasks of their illness or the task of their job, right? Like being an oncologist or whatever. So, you know, how do I get back and forth to my appointments? How do I navigate insurance? You know, how do I, get my kids watched while I'm going to chemo or whatever, right?
Right.
Those tasks, they were really good at finding out how to deal with or dealing with them. But when it came to the emotional side of things, especially in relation to being that real grounded kind of authentic, you know, self, people just weren't equipped to navigate the emotional side of something as serious as cancer from whatever perspective, survivor, caregiver, loved one, professional, whatever. And I said, why don't I find a bunch of really inspirational, interesting, evocative people who, like you and me, had gone through difficult times, had had traumas in their life, and how did those traumas affect them during their exposure to cancer from whatever perspective, and how did those traumas either help them prepare for it, or how did those traumas make it so that they couldn't deal with the emotional side of it? My goal was that if we can maybe understand what you said earlier, you never know what people are going through, but if we can understand that at a really deep level, and expose people to the raw reality of what they've been through and how they've dealt with the things or haven't dealt with the things that have happened to them, then maybe as a reader, we could take from that into our own lives so that we could form more, you know, deep, meaningful, real connections with the people in our lives who are going through things, or we might be able to open up to people who care about us in a more authentic way when we're going through something difficult. And so I feel like when it comes to cancer, mental illness, PTSD, and a few other things, we're just not equipped as human beings to deal with the emotions of it. And
I would argue that we are equipped, but we choose not to tell the truth about it to each other. And so often we go through it alone, versus what you have done is sort of, let's tell the truth about it and expose it so we can come together and connect to empower all of us to get through it.
Yeah, very true. And look, the truth about it is a really good way to say it. So like there's somebody that I talked to that would not accept help from anybody. Mm. Okay. So he was untruthful because he needed help. Right. He would say to the nurses as he was leaving the chemo chair, "Oh, I've got a ride. I'm fine." And meanwhile, he went to his car, drove home and passed out on the driveway. Right. Because wow. He was so right. And then he would say to his dad, "No, somebody from work is taking me to chemo, so you don't have to." And he would drive himself to chemo. Hmm. And then he would tell somebody at work, "No, I don't have to take the help from you because my dad's taking me." And right. So he wasn't being honest. Right. He wasn't being truthful. But you could understand why, because this dude had been abandoned in the worst possible ways at very, very important times in his life. And he didn't want to, and he didn't know how to rely on anybody. Mm. And so when he said, "No, I'm fine. No, I don't need anything." He didn't even let people know that he was sick, and he was very, very, very sick, had very, very little chance to survive. And people that were closest to him, in quotes, I'm saying that, didn't even know, some of them. Wow. So what you said, he wasn't being truthful. True. He wasn't being truthful, but the emotional junk that was stuck around from the trauma of him being abandoned really didn't allow him to be truthful to himself or to others, or get him to accept help or ask for help. Right. Yeah. And so what I wanted to do was to explain how through all of that, and then some relationships and some interactions with a few people that now allowed him to understand that he could ask for help and he could accept it and that he could rely on people. So who can't identify with that story when properly told and truthfully told? And then now you can take maybe a couple of nuggets from his story and go, "Oh, when somebody says they're fine,
let me check and make sure." Because it resonates with me. My mother was like that. She died of stage 4 cancer. And we only knew she had cancer, I think, maybe 3 weeks before she died.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, part of that was she didn't find out because she was dismissing her symptoms. But, you know, I think what I love about your book and the different stories that you bring out is that we can all relate somehow, some way, either with ourselves or someone we know, and to bring that wisdom to a greater good so that we can all become better. And I just love that mission. Oh, David, I feel like we could go on for hours. There's so much we could unpack and chat about. But if there's like a couple things that you really want the audience to remember, to walk away from our conversation with, what is it that you really want them to walk away with?
Well, first of all, thank you for spending time with us, right? Because Michelle's an awesome question asker, and every 10 tries, I'll give a good answer. But we have a good conversation and you spent some time with us. So definitely appreciate that. I would say that it's a jump for me to tell you this and without sounding preachy, but you just don't know what people are going through. And especially when it comes to how the traumas in their life affect their emotional journey with cancer. So when somebody says I'm fine and I don't need help, I'm not coming to that with, "Oh, they absolutely are lying to me. They do need help." And I'm also not coming to it with, "I got to help them no matter what," right? Maybe they're fine. Maybe they're not, but I should ask because I don't know what they're going through and I don't know what they have gone through. And if I can just ask, if I can get a little bit further and a little bit deeper because they're important to me and hopefully I'm important to them and they're going to want to connect with me and have me come to them in an authentic, caring, listening way, give them a safe space. So you know, I'd say that's one that when we talk about, you don't know what people have gone through. We really don't know. Well, I don't know what you did in the hour before this. It could have been the most traumatic thing ever. And you set it aside so that you and I could talk, and people that are listening might be like, an hour from now, they got to go do something that's unbelievably difficult on an emotional level. And they're, you know, so we don't know what people are going through. And I think that's one. I think two is, you know, I love this idea that I've learned later in life, that we got to set our goals higher and we got to be a little bit more optimistic that tomorrow's going to be better, because you're in kind of in control of that. Maybe not always, right? Some people have some difficulties that we don't understand and we couldn't overcome, but you know, for the most part, that's a pretty cool thing. And I just think that we should all be, you know, okay in being our best selves and, you know, forgiving ourselves for not having done that yet. We still, if you're here today, it could be better tomorrow.
There's still a chance. You're above ground and you can always implement your superpower of choice. Regardless of the situation, you can always choose the meaning you attach to it, the perspective, and the way you show up in and after it. So I just love that. Oh, David, if people are like, I am so resonating with what he's talking about, with who he is as a person, where can I find more? How can I buy the books? Where can people find you? How can they connect with you?
Well, thank you. And also on the Cycle of Lives book, 100% of the proceeds are going to support the cancer focused charities that were chosen by each of the book participants.
So those, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's really cool. Those charities are listed actually in the book. They're also on my website, cycleoflives.org. And the books are available wherever books are sold, you know, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, local bookstore, whatever. The ebook is out. And very, very shortly, like within the coming weeks and probably less than that, maybe within the next week from when we're talking, the Audible will be out. And it's unbelievable because the 15 different stories, each one is told by one of 15 different actors. So
that's incredible.
It's going to be unbelievable. It's unbelievable. So I think the Audible is going to really be something.
Very cool. Oh, I'm so excited about that. And of course, listeners, as you know, click and go. Links will be in the show notes, so it'll make it really easy for you. And if you sign up for either Kindle Unlimited or Audible Unlimited, the books are free, I believe.
Yeah.
So, you know, take advantage of that and check out the website. It's a rabbit hole you want to go into. It's a good one. It will enhance your life for the better. I just know it. David's incredible. His story is incredible. The stories that he's connected with are incredible. I'm so grateful you had time to come on the show, David, and that we connected. And this has just been such an enriching conversation for me. So thank you so much.
You're welcome, Michelle. And keep doing what you're doing. You're really good at it. And I know that it's meaningful to you because of what you do in life. So I'm really glad that you're doing it. I appreciate the time.
I appreciate that. I accept it. And I am going to embrace that on today. And listeners, as I always say, keep walking. Always, always keep walking. Never stop walking. Eventually, you might get to run a marathon if you keep walking long enough. But seriously, keep walking, because if you continue to show up and keep walking in your life day after day, you will reach your destiny. You will reach your destination. And I always encourage you on the journey to always, always choose gratitude.
As you know, every single episode, I end with my encouragement for you to choose gratitude on your journey as you keep walking. But have you ever asked yourself, that's great, Michelle, but how do I do that? How do I implement gratitude? How do I choose gratitude? It's not easy living this life. And sometimes I don't feel very grateful. How do I incorporate gratitude into my daily life? Well, I've got you covered. Just for you, I have a Gateway to Gratitude mini course in the Successful Diligence School. There is a link in the show notes, as well as a coupon code just for podcast listeners, where you get 50% off. So head to the link in the show notes or successfuldiligence.com and click the school tab on the website. It will take you to the school and you can see the Gateway to Gratitude course, which walks you through how to implement gratitude into your daily life. Trust me, gratitude and gratefulness, when implemented effectively, will change your life. How do you know, man?